It's called the Black Man is God. It's called the Black Man is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can move me?
You really do?
Anybody on your watch?
Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreams and karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the taxi. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, night coast and blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like that. Never make me think wrong. Just make me angry.
Never make me go underdog. And never talk about
who's gonna stop me.
But
ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight in the world fast enough to stop me.
He's a poet, a prophet. So, y'all see anything good on TV tonight? He did it again, y'all. He did it again. I'm not sure how many more times we gotta keep going over this, man. Like, y'all should know. Y'all should really, really know by now. Tom Brady coming through in crunch time for like the 9,000th time. And again, in the Super Bowl for what was pretty much like the 6 out of 7 times. I mean, in 7 trips. He's won 5 now, and he's led the game-winning go-ahead drive with the game either tied or his team trailing in the fourth quarter in all 5 of the victories. And he did it in the first Super Bowl against the Giants when he threw a touchdown to Randy Moss with 4 minutes left, but then Eli came back with that lucky drive to make the Patriots go 18-1. That was a million years ago, though. That was 3 more Super Bowl appearances ago, 2 more championships ago. And the Patriots 34, the Falcons 28. New England wins Super Bowl 51, as predicted by your boy Jay Hicks at HipHopSportsSupport.com. Welcome to the preseason podcast of the year, y'all. I'm trying to keep my voice down. My son is upstairs. He is sleeping. It's 11:25 here on February the 5th of 2017. First podcast of 2017. And I'm a little late with the podcasting thing. Reason being is I've been trying to figure out some new ways to do it. Frankly, the podcast, in terms of actually the actual production behind the scenes of the podcast, is a little bit taxing. So I've been doing my best to try to come up with a better way to do it and a more efficient way to do it so I can get the podcast cranked out quicker. I haven't been able to do that yet, but that's still on the docket for 2017. And additionally, I've been trying to get some guests on and had some things fall through, so that's kind of been the reason why we haven't had a podcast this year yet, but here we are. I figured what better time than now after we've just witnessed arguably the greatest Super Bowl of all time, the first ever Super Bowl to go into overtime. And we just saw not just the greatest quarterback of all time at work, we saw the greatest football player ever at work. He wears number 12 for the Patriots. His name is Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. He's the greatest football player of all time. And I'm going to get into that a little bit later. But I'm freestyling it tonight, y'all. I don't have any notes in front of me. I got nothing. I didn't take notes during the game. I was just trying my best to be in the moment, man. And, you know, as you can tell, I'm kind of like out of breath from the celebration and the exhilaration of the game. It was intense, man. It was intense as a fan. Even if you didn't have a dog in a fight, it was intense. I felt like I had a dog in a fight simply because, number one, you know, I am a Brady supporter, but even bigger than that, you know, I picked the Patriots to win the Super Bowl before the season, as did Kenneth Hicks here at Hip Hop Sports Report. So, for 2 of our 3 writers on the staff here to pick the Patriots preseason, that was a good look. And I'm going to see if I can find the list of things that we've predicted correctly, or that I've predicted correctly in the history of hip-hop sports support, because it's growing, y'all. It's an impressive list, I'm not going to front. But before I get into the game and everything, I just wanted to shout out the website again, obviously, hiphopsportsupport.com. If you're not following us on Twitter, I don't know what the hell is wrong with you, but you need to get at us on Twitter at HHS Report. We have some great dialogue on there, some great conversations. Matter of fact, let me take this opportunity to shout out a couple followers real quick. Just a second here. Let me see, my man. I'm going to mispronounce this name, but at Ariels, A-R-I-E-L-S underscore way 14. So shout out to him. Again, I probably mispronounced the name, man. My apologies, but shouts to you, because I know you've been riding for a good minute with a lot of what we've said and a lot of our predictions and things like that, especially as they pertain to the Patriots, as has my man at 216 Tone. 216 Tone has been down for a good minute with Brady and the Pats, and more importantly, he's been down with the HHSR movement. So we appreciate you, bro. And he's a Clevelander too, just like your boy. So definitely shout out to 216 Tone. Go check them out on Twitter as well, specifically them. But again, shout out to all my followers on Twitter and all of our subscribers on iTunes and all of our subscribers on Stitcher Radio. And all the Facebook follower friend people that we have. Facebook follower friend, I'm trying to think of another F. I'm not that creative at 11:30 at night. But yeah, man, shouts to all y'all for following with the website. And got some big things in store for 2017, believe that. So might as well jump into the game right quick. Phone is still blowing up as we speak. It's getting all kinds of stuff. My brother just sent me the video from when Tom Brady was turning up to Handsome and Wealthy a couple of years ago, when they beat Seattle. He's going to be turning up to Bad and Bougie in 2017, believe that. Unbelievable game, y'all. I mean, again, just that comeback. I mean, I was in an argument with friends of the podcast, Mark and Vince Hicks, pretty much throughout the duration of the game. Mark and Vince, I love you guys, man, but y'all counted out the Patriots in the second quarter. Y'all was like, game time, it's done. Y'all didn't have nothing positive to say. And, you know, I was obviously not, I wasn't convinced that things were going to work out for New England necessarily. You know, I'd be lying if I said I knew that they were going to come back undoubtedly, you know, even though that's what I said on Facebook in my personal page, jokingly. But yeah, there was definitely some doubt based on how they were playing. But I always felt like New England had a chance to come back, and y'all didn't. I know y'all have faith in Tom, but y'all didn't have faith in the defense. Y'all didn't have faith that everybody else could get it together. And I understand all that. But, you know, I just, for the last 10 years, after he won, sometime between the time that Brady won the second and third Super Bowl, I just vowed to myself, I was never going to bet against this guy again. And people don't understand that, you know, I had no dog in the Tom Brady fight. It's not like I know him. You know, it's not like my family knows him. We grew up together. He's from my hometown. He went to Michigan, for crying out loud. I'm from Ohio. I'm a Buckeye fan. I have no reason to be a fan of his, but he's won me over with consistent excellence. And the fact that the rest of the world can't see that is, you know, I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, that's kind of on y'all. It really is. I want to get back to the game real quick, though. First of all, shout out to the Atlanta Falcons, man. What a game the Atlanta Falcons played. I'm not going to front. I thought the Falcons were going to get blown out coming into the game. Not because they're not talented. I was well aware of the talent that they possessed throughout the playoffs. And I had them beating Seattle and covering against Seattle. I picked Green Bay to beat them, but that was primarily because I had the Packers and the Patriots in the Super Bowl preseason, so I wanted to stick with the Packers. But realistically, I even wrote on the site in our NFC Championship game preview column, I noted that Atlanta should win the game because all signs indicate that Atlanta is the better football team. And so that they should win the game, even though I picked Green Bay. So I have a tremendous amount of respect for the Falcons going in. But I thought they were going to get blown out today for all the reasons laid out in our Super Bowl column that centered primarily around the experience factor, which heavily favored New England, the Brady factor, which heavily favored New England, and the inexperience on defense and just the shaky defense as a whole of the Falcons. I just was not a believer. And man, did they make me look stupid for pretty much, you know, the better part of the game, really. The Falcons defense was tremendous. They flied around the football. They were flying to the football like crazy. Like, they really looked like, you know, the Legion of Boom defense of like 3 years ago when the Seahawks destroyed the Broncos in the Super Bowl. Like, that's how fast they look. They look so much faster than New England at the beginning of the game. And we noted the speed in the column. And, you know, I was well aware that they had the capability of being a team that could get to the ball quickly, that could make stops, that could make some plays. But statistically, you know, the Falcons defense was garbage all year. I mean, they were. They ranked, and it was funny too, was that friend of the website, Anthony Houston, he and I kind of got into a back and forth on the phone yesterday when talking about the game, because he picked the Falcons to win, and I'm not going to throw shade at him because the Falcons damn near won the game, so, you know, who am I to do that? But beyond just that, the Falcons, you know, he kind of said, well, I think Atlanta is in a position where their offense is so great that their defense all season long has been in a position where they've been just playing a lot of prevent and stuff like that because they've had these big leads. So they're going to give up teams that are, they're going to give up a lot of passing yards to teams that are trying to get back in the game and all that. And my rebuttal to him was, well, why is it that they rank like in the bottom of the league in sacks then? And why do they rank in the bottom of the league in interceptions? They don't generate any turnovers, really. They don't, you know, they're not known for getting pressure on the quarterback really outside of Vic Beasley. They gave up one of the worst teams in the league at giving up yards per carry on average. And their pass defense wasn't anything to write home about. Like, they pretty much were in the bottom half of the league in every defensive statistical category. What was going to lead me to believe that they were going to beat a Patriots team that scores 30 a game? You know, I just didn't see it. So, but like I said, I will fully admit that I was wrong, man. I was, you know, it's like on the Colin Cowherd show, they do when Colin was right, when Colin was wrong. I like to do a lot of when Justin was right on this podcast, you guys may have noticed, but I will fully admit that I was wrong about the Falcons defense. In spite of the fact that there was nothing statistically to lead me to believe that they were going to do what they did tonight, they actually performed extremely well under pressure, under the lights, against the Patriots in the first half. They had the big pick six of Brady in the first half. It was the first pick six he's ever thrown in the playoffs. They were game. They were hungry and ready to go. So, shouts to the defense. And Matt Ryan was terrific when he was on the field. And that was the biggest problem. That was the only thing. Even Brady said this post game. The only thing that really went New England's way in the first half was that their offense was on the field the whole time. And so even with the long halftime rest, the Falcons defense was constantly on the field and Matt Ryan, the potent offense, wasn't. Matt Ryan had a quarterback rating of 144.1 out of a possible 158.3. So he was fantastic in this game. He did take a few sacks. He took 5 sacks, actually, but he was great. He was 17 to 23 for 284, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. He did lose a fumble, but, you know, he only threw 23 passes. And I think that was great news for the Patriots and their chances of winning. Okay, here we go. It took me a second, y'all. I was a little sidetracked as I was talking there. I was trying to find my list of predictions that your boy has gotten correct in the 5 years of hip-hop sports been going on. So, adding to this ever-growing list, the Miami Heat winning the 2013 NBA championship before the season. The Heat beating the Spurs in the 2013 finals in 7 games before the series began. And then I correctly predicted the outcome of all 7 games on Twitter. The Seahawks winning the Super Bowl and defeating the 49ers in an NFC championship game in the process before the season started. Had Florida State defeating Auburn in the 2014 College Football National Championship game. Had the Spurs winning the 2014 NBA championship before the season started. The San Antonio Spurs facing the Miami Heat at the start of the 2014 playoffs in the finals. Predicted LeBron was going to come back to Cleveland in the summer of 2014. said that Andrew Wiggins was going to get picked first by the Cavs, which he was. Had the Patriots winning Super Bowl 49 before the season started. They threw dirt on my boy tweets. You remember the they threw dirt on my boy movement about Tom Brady, which they're still throwing dirt on him to this day. But yeah, I was right about that, I think. The Patriots defeating the Seahawks in the Super Bowl at the start of the 2015 playoffs. Had Ohio State defeating Alabama and Oregon in the Sugar Bowl and in the College Football National Championship game 2015. Let's see. I had Floyd Mayweather beating up on Manny Pacquiao in a 12-round blowout. Had the Warriors facing the Cavaliers in the 2015 NBA Finals. And I believe that I had the Cavs winning that series, but that didn't happen. I think that was largely due to injury, of course, to Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. I also had the Cavaliers winning the 2016 NBA Championship before the season, which they did. Said they were not down. When they were down 3-1, I said they were not out. When everybody else counted them out down 3-1, because nobody had ever come back from a 3-1 deficit in the finals, I said they would come back and win. They did. Let's see, what else? I narrowly missed on the Cleveland Indians. I had the Indians in 7 before the World Series against the Cubs. That was like the only thing. I was really close on that one, but came up a little short. Shout out to the Cubs for their win. Bastards, I'm still not over that. And then I had the New England Patriots winning the Super Bowl 51 before the season started, and had them winning this game, obviously, and they did. So, yeah, good run for your boy on the prediction tip. I don't get everything right, but I do okay. And the reason why I continue to harp on that stuff, y'all, is because I'm trying to build something here. I want somebody new who's never heard me speak before to hear this podcast and say, damn, that guy Justin knows what he's talking about. Like, maybe I should subscribe to the podcast and get some more knowledge. You know what I mean? Because, I know what I'm talking about when it comes to this football, basketball stuff. You know what I'm saying? And people don't want to always listen to it. One thing I mentioned on Twitter within the last couple of weeks, I think, was that, you know, people really only believe what they want to believe. And that's one of the things that I learned in 2016, is that people really only believe whatever they want to believe. And that's kind of where I bring it back to the game tonight, because there were so many people that had so many negative things to say about Tom Brady and the Patriots for so many years, and they had no real basis to it. You know, and like the people who want to sit here and call the Patriots cheaters, and for that reason they were rooting for the Falcons to win tonight, in spite of the fact that the Falcons got knocked for pumping crowd noise into the Georgia Dome a couple of years ago. And they got caught and they were punished by the NFL and nobody cared. And the reason why nobody cared is because they don't win. That's why nobody cares. So some people know about it. Football fans know about that. The common person, the Johnny come lately to the Super Bowl, I'm just here for Gaga and the commercials. That person, that fan doesn't know about the Falcons cheating. All they know is that the Patriots are cheaters, quote unquote, and I'm rooting for the Falcons because I don't like cheaters. Well, yeah, the Falcons got caught pumping in crowd noise, which is a way more egregious offense than deflating a football, which was never proven, by the way. And not only was deflating a football never proven, but they rigged the charges against Brady and basically busted him on a technicality, which was that the commissioner had the authority to suspend him for no reason. Not that they actually found that he did inflate any footballs or anything like that. And again, not that deflating footballs was actually any benefit to Tom Brady. Because as we know from the AFC Championship game that year, he was better in the second half with the quote unquote properly inflated balls than he was in the first half. And not to mention, I laid out the statistics that Brady has put up in the time since the Deflategate incident took place, which was halftime of that AFC Championship game 2 years ago. And I'll read those numbers off to you once again real quick, just because I did the math on them. Coming into tonight's game, Brady had played from the second half of the Colts game 2 years ago through the AFC Championship game against Pittsburgh 2 weeks ago. That's 33 and a half games Brady's played, including that suspension where he missed four games. He completed 65% of his throws. He threw 10,066 yards. That's an average of 300 yards a game. He threw 78 touchdowns to only 15 interceptions. He had a QBR rating of 72.4. That's out of 100, which if 72.4 were measured up against this season's passers, that would have ranked about fourth or fifth in the league. And his passer rating on average was 105 over those 33 and a half games. So Brady was lights out in the time since Deflategate, which leads you to know, which you know, unquestionably leads you to the conclusion that the deflating of balls, even if he did do it, which was never proven, there is no added benefit. There's no benefit seen, you know, in his performance. Like, the numbers reflect that Brady was lights out after the league was taking extreme measures to check the balls and changing up the protocol for which footballs are handled and all that stuff, which they really didn't even do a good job of that if you follow the story, but that's beside the point. Brady's performance was never affected. Just like when Spygate went down, the following year, the Patriots went undefeated and were one lucky drive away from being the only 19-0 team in history. And Brady broke all kinds of passing records that year. And that was the year after they got busted for Spygate, which, if anybody knows anything about Spygate, you know that it was an extremely overblown situation. But people blow it up because it's the Patriots, because they win, because they have a history of winning, and people can't take the fact that they're so goddamn good. They can't take it. So what do? They come up with other reasons as to why they're so good. So Marshall Faulk gets on TV and talks about how they were, you know, stealing signs during their walkthrough of Super Bowl 36 and all kinds of BS like that. And the Carolina Panthers were complaining after their Super Bowl loss to the Patriots that the Patriots were doing some, you know, unscrupulous things or whatever. There was accusations of nefarious behavior by the Pittsburgh Steelers every time that, you know, talking about the headsets would go out every time they go to Foxborough. The Colts used to sweep the locker room for bugs, you know, in their locker room and all this stuff. There's always something with the Patriots. Even when Kyle Shanahan, the offensive coordinator for the Falcons, lost his backpack with the Falcons game plan in it before the game this past week, he lost his backpack that had Atlanta's game plan in it, and a reporter found it and returned it to him. But when that story came out, people twisted it, and all of a sudden, people were saying that the Patriots stole the game plan, that they stole the backpack. It's like, y'all just make up whatever it is you want to make up to try to discredit Brady and the Pats. And you got to give it up, man. You got to give it up. You got to give up the criticism and the hatred, and you have to give it up to Brady and New England. Just looking back at the game, like I said, Atlanta really got after it early, and you have to tip your cap to them. I mean, again, they had this. This was scoreless in the first quarter. It was 21-3 Atlanta in the second quarter. You had a Devontae Freeman run of 5 yards. Devontae Freeman was outstanding in this game. He looked like he was just in another gear. And frankly, I don't think he touched the ball enough. As I look at it, he only had 11 carries in the game, but he had 75 yards. So he was averaging, over 7 yards a carry. I mean, I know that Atlanta didn't touch the ball a lot, but it seemed like he should have gotten the ball more. And as while we're on stats, Julio Jones finished with 4 catches for 87 yards and no touchdowns. I thought he was going to get 100 yards, I said in the column. But I made a point to note that receivers, even dominant receivers, don't really go off against Bill Belichick defenses. And Julio Jones' performance tonight fell right in line with that. But Devontae Freeman was awesome. And then Matt Ryan then got it going. And next thing you know, it was back-to-back touchdown drives by the Falcons. And it was looking, I mean, they went 5 plays, 71 yards. And then they turned right around and went 5 plays, 62 yards. And it was looking like they had a lot of momentum right there. And then Robert Alford made the 82-yard interception return, which is the first pick six Brady has ever thrown in the playoffs. And Lord, did he pick a terrible time to do it. And the Patriots were not looking good. I resisted the urge to say that they were in trouble just because there was a lot of time left in the game still. But they weren't looking good. And then they didn't cash in on the touchdown when they got down close at the end of the second quarter, and they had to settle for a field goal, and they had to settle for a 21-3 halftime lead. So It didn't look good. And then Atlanta made it 28-3 in the third quarter, about 6 minutes into the third quarter. The one thing that I will say really worked, again, in New England's benefit was the fact that the Falcons, because of the pick six, the Falcons basically did not touch the ball for over an hour. And I made that point to the fam on a text message chat that we have. I don't recall if I made that point on Twitter or not. But, I mean, they were sitting, man. Like, they had the momentum. They was, boom, touchdown with Devontae Freeman. Boom, touchdown Austin Hooper. And before you knew it, the Falcons offense looked like it had finally found a rhythm, finally started to click. And then silence. They were just sitting there for, you know, like literally 65 minutes of real time. And that has an impact. Like, if you have a rhythm and then you have to sit for that long, guys get cold. You're not even stretched out anymore. Like, I mean, the amount of time with the halftime and everything that went into that with Lady Gaga, who did a fine job. I thought her dance moves was kind of whack. And I'm not really a Lady Gaga fan. She's not really my cup of tea. But I thought her performance was good. So I'm not going to hate on the performance other than the dance move thing. I'm used to looking at Beyonce dance. You watch Beyonce dance and you watch Gaga dance. It's not the same. It's like watching Tom Brady quarterback and watching Cody Kessler quarterback. You know what I'm saying? It ain't the same. So, but the length of the halftime show, and then you mix that with the fact that New England had a long drive and it ended in the pick six before that, you know, and then they had, I think, another drive, and that's when it ended in a field goal. So they had like back-to-back long drives where Atlanta's offense didn't see the ball, and then there was that long halftime break. That was one thing that went in the Patriots' favor in the first half. And Atlanta's defense was on the field a lot. And even though they were flying around making plays, it was going to come back to haunt them, the fact that they were on the field so much, even with the extended halftime break. Fast forward to the second half, and you know, you had Brady trying to find James White out of the backfield a lot. LeGarrette Blount really couldn't get going on the ground. There was a drive. The New England defense came out the gate just both barrels blazing. Got a quick three and out. Then Edelman comes up with a nice punt return, and everybody's like, okay, now let's see New England put some points on the board here, and they'll be back in business. And three and out. Drop pass by Chris Hogan. Drop pass by Julian Edelman. And things were looking bleak at that point because – it was like the Patriots just failed to cash in. And that was when Tevin Coleman came back, I believe, and then scored the touchdown to make it 28-3. So it wasn't good. The Patriots finally got on the board with 2:06 left in the third quarter. They finally scored their first touchdown of the game. So it didn't seem likely that they were going to make this comeback. But again, man, Brady. Brady, you don't lose faith when you have number 12 on the sidelines. The numbers that Brady put up in the fourth quarter were astonishing. Let me see if I can find those. Hang on a second. Okay, found a few statistics here. So they flashed this stat during the screen, or on the screen during the game, said that Brady in the fourth quarter was 16 for 21 for 196 yards, a touchdown, no interceptions, with a rating of 120.3. There's also this stat that says in the history of the NFL, I'm not sure if this is postseason or regular season or both, but it says in NFL history, teams entering the fourth quarter trailing by at least 19 points were 0-93. So 93 teams were trailing by 19 or more points entering the fourth quarter of a game, and all 93 of them lost. And today the Patriots won in that situation. And then here's another fun stat. Tom Brady in the fourth quarter of his last two Super Bowl appearances, 29 of 36, which is 81% completions, 320 yards on 8.9 yards per attempt, three touchdowns, no interceptions. Y'all, you really don't get it. Like I said on this podcast 2 years ago that what Brady did against the Seahawks was his drop the mic Michael Jordan Game 6 in Utah performance. That's what that was. That's what that was. In the face of Deflategate, Deflategate was still fresh at the time, going up against the big, bad, loudmouth Seattle Seahawks defense, who are still running their mouths from their couches on Twitter because cats like Earl Thomas can't take the fact that Tom Brady's better than him and better than their team. You know, they're still taking shots at Brady 2 years later. But against that defense, and people want to say, well, they were injured. Well, you know what? They were out there. And when Seattle was winning, you didn't hear nobody talking about how injured they were. You know, all you heard was all the Patriots is overrated. You saw Richard Sherman on the Sound FX NFL network show where they mic up the players during the game talking about, oh, Brady's heart's almost gone. It's this close. Just take it. Just take his heart. Man, please. You can't take Tom Brady's heart. That's not possible. Even if he loses the game, you can't take his heart. His heart's not the reason why they didn't win the game, you know? But they won, and they win, and they win more than anybody else, the Patriots do. And so that was his, you know, mic drop performance was against the Seahawks. And people want to sit here and act like Brady had something to prove. It was so funny going through my personal Facebook feed and looking at all my friends, everybody just right down the line, Brady's the best ever, best ever, best ever, GOAT, GOAT, best quarterback of all time, GOAT, GOAT, GOAT. And it was like, where were all y'all before the game? Because on my personal Facebook page, I said before the game, that Tom Brady was already the greatest of all time. And that anything that happened after this point was just gravy, including tonight's performance. Just gravy. That's all it is. This is just a whipped cream on the sundae. This is syrup on top with a cherry. This is nothing. He's already solidified his legacy and his rep. You know? When you hold pretty much every postseason passing record and you hold every, you know, regular season record in terms of winning, you know, win percentage as a starter and fastest to 100 wins, 200 wins, all-time wins leader in football history at the quarterback position. There's no significant drop-off in his performance from the regular season to the postseason, despite the fact that you play much stiffer competition in the postseason. You know, that's just what it is. You play tougher defenses, you play tougher offenses, which affects how your offense can perform. And yeah, you know, your statistics are supposed to come down a little bit in the playoffs, but there's not a significant drop-off with Brady. And this has been one of the things that I've been hammering home on Tom Brady for the last few years is that there are no qualifiers to Tom Brady. He's great in September. He's great in January. He's great in February. He's great in the cold because he plays outdoors every game in New England. He's great when it's sunny. He's great down south. He's great in the dome. It doesn't matter. He's great in the first quarter. He's great in the fourth quarter. He's great when his players are injured. He's great when his players are healthy. By the way, he won tonight without Rob Gronkowski. They just won the Super Bowl without their best offensive player. You could make the argument before the season, even in this season, that the best non-quarterback in the NFL is Rob Gronkowski. And he was out for New England basically all year. He only played in 5 games where he had any real impact. And the Patriots were undefeated without Rob Gronkowski. They weren't undefeated without Tom Brady. No matter how anybody tries to spin it and make it sound like he's a system quarterback because they went 3-1. Well, they went 3-1, and that one game that they lost, they got shut out. So y'all really need to check yourselves with this stuff, man. Brady, so many people were just acting like this is what put Brady over the top finally. Like, okay, finally now I believe. I'm a believer. There were so many converts tonight. So many converts. And it's just like, what were y'all watching the last 15 years? What were y'all watching when he was winning Super Bowls throwing touchdowns to linebackers 12 years ago? Because that's what he was doing. Literally, throwing TDs to linebackers. And if he wasn't throwing a TD to a linebacker, he was throwing TDs to David Patton and David Givens and Troy Brown and a bunch of also-rans. You know what I mean? He's in the AFC Championship game throwing touchdowns to Nate Solder, the left tackle. I mean, and in this game, who were his top targets? One guy that was a college quarterback and another guy who was a lacrosse player in college. Like, this dude, like, you know, I affectionately call him the God QB, not in a blasphemous way, but, you know, this dude's been making water into wine for 15 years. 15 years he's been doing this. And they change out the parts every year. Belichick never drafts him a good receiver. You know, half the time he's throwing to Aaron Dobson. They got to pick up Kembrell Tompkins. Remember all these guys? Brandon LaFell came. Ocho Cinco had a cup of coffee. Randy Moss was there, but only for a couple of, about 2 years. You know, Brady got hurt the second year, so him and Moss only really played not even two full seasons together. I think I read today the other day that they played only about 33 games together, Brady and Moss. So, I mean, you know, it's not like this guy ever had the weapons like Peyton Manning did. Peyton Manning, you know, the shelves were stocked for Peyton Manning every year he was in Indianapolis. And when he left Indy, he deliberately chose a team that had even more weapons than when he left from. And I don't really blame him for doing that. But I'm just saying, like, Denver had all kinds of weaponry when he got there. And that's why he set all those records. Not to say that he didn't have nothing to do with that. But, I mean, come on. Like, look who he's throwing to. Look who Brady's throwing to. Brady, aside from Gronkowski, Brady's never had a big dominant threat receiver. You know, Moss and Gronk were the only two guys that he's ever had that were dominant like that. And he only got 33 games with Moss. And Gronk is hurt half the time. So, I mean, what is Brady to do? Oh, but he just goes out there and he turns James White into a superstar. Because James White, in this game, the number three running back, that is, the third down back, had 14 catches for 110 yards and a touchdown. And I believe he ran for a touchdown too, did he not? Well, he ran for the one in overtime for sure. And he ran for a two-point conversion. So he had two touchdowns rushing and a touchdown receiving. And he ran for a two-point conversion. So if you weren't going to give the MVP to Brady, you'd give it to James White. But, you know, who was James White? What did you know about James White before this game? Honestly. Where did he go to school? He went to Wisconsin. You didn't know that. What about Malcolm Mitchell? Who is Malcolm Mitchell? He's a rookie receiver out of Georgia. You didn't know that. You never heard of Malcolm Mitchell. You never heard of any of these guys. Tom Brady turns these guys into superstars, man. I told good friend of the show, Adam Clark, that he was going to turn Julian Edelman into a star back in 2010. And guess what? He did. He did. Julian Edelman's dating models now. Literally. And speaking of Julian Incredible, the catch that he made with 2:24 left in the game, where it was almost picked off, but it was a fastball and the defensive back couldn't hold it, and Edelman went over three guys and somehow made the catch. One of the best catches in NFL history. Right up there with Lynn Swann's catch. Right up there with Dwight Clark's catch, although that wasn't the Super Bowl. Right up there with the Tyree catch. Right up there with the Jermaine Kearse catch from 2 years ago that nobody's going to remember because the Seahawks lost the game. Just improbable stuff from Julian Edelman. Tough as nails. You got to love that dude. But again, he's not, you know, the quintessential receiving threat. And he wouldn't be the player that he is if he didn't mold his game and his approach to the game after number 12. And he'll be the first to tell you that. One thing that Atlanta did that I really did not understand was, I think it was on their last drive that they had the ball. So New England kicks a field goal to start the fourth, makes it 28-12. Amendola scores, makes it 28-20. I think that was after the Matt Ryan fumble, if I'm not mistaken. Then New England needs to get a stop, and Atlanta has the ball, and Julio Jones made what we thought at the time, I think, was the play of the day. It was before Edelman's catch, I believe, but the catch on the sidelines. Matt Ryan made an unbelievable throw. Julio Jones made an unreal catch, and that looked like it was going to be, you know, the memorable play of the night. But right after that, Atlanta starts throwing the ball again. They were like inside the 30-yard line. And all of a sudden, Atlanta just starts still throwing it. And there was maybe 3 or 4 minutes left in the game at the time. And I apologize for not having the exact data in front of me. But it's about 3 or 4 minutes left in the game at the time. Maybe 5 minutes at the most. And it was inside the 30, something like that. And it's like, why are you still throwing the ball? You should be running the ball to milk the clock out. And Atlanta was up 28-20 at that time. If you run it three times to Devontae Freeman, who, by the way, was averaging 7 yards a carry on the night, but if you run it three times to Devontae Freeman and you don't get the first down, Matt Bryant kicks a 45-yard field goal at the most, and you're up 31-20 with 4 minutes left, 3 minutes left, and the game is over. It's over. Unless New England scores, you know, a touchdown in 30 seconds and then gets an onside kickback or something. Like, that's like, it basically would have been over if you just run it three times and kick the field goal. I don't understand what Atlanta was thinking, and they ended up taking a sack. They took a huge sack, and then there was a penalty, a holding penalty after that on Chris Long, the defensive end, Howie Long's kid. And that pushed Atlanta way back. They couldn't get any closer, and they had to punt it. And then that's when Brady let them down on the drive to tie the game. So that was the biggest thing that Atlanta did. The single thing that Atlanta did that irked me the most, that I thought really cost them the game. It wasn't, you know, the stuff earlier about, you know, New England's going to get a touchdown here or there. You're going to play a little bit of prevent. They're going to pick up some yards. I get all that. But when you had the ball and all you had to do was basically run it three times, you didn't even have to pick up any yards. Just run it three times, make New England use their timeouts, run some clock, kick the field goal, make it a two-possession, 11-point game. So the Patriots would need at least a touchdown, a two-point conversion, and a field goal to tie the game in under 3 minutes. Probably without any timeouts. It wasn't going to happen. Atlanta would be champions right now. Everybody would be blasting Bad and Bougie from the mountaintops. You know what I'm saying? But they I don't know what they were thinking in that moment. That was just a brutal mistake on their part. Other than, I mean, like, Atlanta played solid, man. You can't really knock the Falcons too much. They really did not have the ball much at all in the game. In fact, time of possession was 40 minutes for the Patriots, 23 for the Falcons. And the Falcons only scored 7 points in overtime. Or excuse me, the Falcons only scored 7 points in the second half of the game and overtime. I even saw people complaining about the overtime rule again, which I think is ridiculous. I think the overtime rule is fine how it is. You know why? Because nobody was complaining when, what's the kid's name? When Robert Alford took an 82-yard pick six back and Atlanta got points for that. Wasn't nobody complaining about, you know, anything then, because the defense is able to generate points. You know, this is not a situation, you know, it's not like baseball, where in baseball, it would be different if it was like baseball. Say they flipped a coin in extra innings and one team got to bat and then they scored a run and the other team didn't get a shot at all to hit. That's not how extra innings works. Both teams get to bat, but that's because the team that's on defense can't score in baseball. But in football, the team that's on defense can score. So we saw the Falcons defense make a play earlier in the game. All they had to do was make a play again. Simple, right? They couldn't do it. They were gassed, but they couldn't do it. And so that's why I don't have a problem with the overtime rule. I think they tweaked the overtime rule. I think it's perfect the way it is. But, you know, people got to find something to complain about because the Patriots won. So, of course, Brady was lights out after that. Took the Patriots down twice in the fourth quarter for touchdowns. Converted on 2 2-point conversions. One was on the pass to Amendola. The first one was a James White sneak play, which was a clever play, direct snap to James White. The second one was on a pass to Amendola on a screen. And then when overtime came, all the momentum was in New England's favor. And I don't want to say like the lights got to the Falcons or the Falcons got shook in the second half. I'm not going to say that. I don't think that that's true. I think that that would be me trying to force a narrative there. I think the Falcons were prepared to play. Their young guys stepped up and played fantastic. Deion Jones, from the start of the game, was making plays. You know, the defense on the whole impressed tonight. Statistically, the Falcons weren't there all year, but tonight they put on their big boy pants and they balled out defensively. But offensively, though, everybody talking about Atlanta, and rightfully so. But guess what? They scored 28 points in the game and they had a pick six. So that tells us that Atlanta only scored 21 points in the game offensively. Now, I know that you may be thinking, well, they only had the ball for 20-something minutes. Okay, but how many punts did they have? You know what I mean? Like, let's not act like Atlanta was flawless, okay? Because I'm looking here, and it looks like they punted at least four times. They punted six times in the game, actually. Atlanta punted the ball six times. New England didn't even punt that frequently. They only punted four times. So, you know, we can't sit here and play this game where it's like, you know, it's all because of the time of possession or whatever like that. Like, no, Atlanta's offense, which everybody thought was going to rack up the points, didn't. They didn't. They had their opportunities, but they didn't. So that's something that counts for New England, man. But I don't want to make this into a super long podcast. But I do want to just take a second to close this out on the note that I kind of started on, which is Brady. And I know you guys are probably sick of me beating a dead horse about Tom Brady, which I've been beating publicly on the podcast and on the website here for 5 years. And privately, you know, in my personal life around, you know, my circle of friends and acquaintances and whatnot, I've been beating this drum for over 10 years with Brady. And it just reminds me of the Jay-Z song, What They Say, where it was the Hov and Rick Ross record on Ross's album, where Hov said, niggas couldn't do nothing with me, they put the devil on me. I remember when I was back during all the Illuminati rumors was coming out with Jay-Z, and that he's a devil worshiper, he sold his soul and all this kind of craziness. And Jay-Z's basically just like, y'all niggas couldn't do nothing with me, so you put the devil on me. And that's what they're doing with Tom Brady. The only thing they got left now is Trump. That's all I've heard. That's all I've seen. People putting Donald Trump and Brady memes on my Facebook page and everything else. It's just like, that's all you have now. Because you can't say nothing about football. You can't. It's done. It's done. The guy's made it to 7 Super Bowls. He's won 5. Both are records. The guy has been to 11 AFC Championship games. That's a record. He owns every postseason passing record. He's going to own a lot of regular season passing records. He's a 2-time regular season MVP. He's a 4-time Super Bowl MVP, which is a record. Like I said, he excels in any situation, which you can't say about pretty much any quarterback. I mean, what quarterback can you say that about, that they excel in all situations? Rain, sleet, snow, sunshine, you know, clutch situation, January, October, doesn't matter. Fourth quarter, first quarter, injuries around them. You change the circumstances, it does not matter. Brady just performs at a high level all the time. And even when he's not perfect, like today, he was not perfect. He threw that pick six, it was ugly. He threw in a double coverage, it was ugly. But it didn't matter at the end of the day. Because that guy has a will to win that's unmatched by anybody in the history of modern day football. And dare say, of all time. And I know it's really difficult to compare players from different eras and all that stuff. And, you know, I'm not that old, y'all. You know what I mean? Like, I came in, when I came up, you know, I was catching the tail end of Montana and Marino and Elway and those guys, you know, when I was coming up. I mean, I saw all those guys, but they were at the tail end of their careers for the most part. You know, for the most part, their glory days were behind them. And but they were still doing things. And I came in and I saw pretty much all of Brett Favre and all that stuff. But, you know, I wasn't there for Bradshaw and Staubach and Sammy Baugh and Otto Graham and, you know, Johnny Unitas and all those guys. But when you think about what the quarterback position is today, and when you think about how the game has evolved to put so much on the quarterback, and, you know, in the 60s, the focus was on the running game, you know? So, you know, Bart Starr was great, but he also was handing off to Paul Hornung, you know? And Otto Graham was great, but, you know, he was handing off to Marion Motley and I think Jim Brown at a later point. So it's hard to compare that. But what I do know is that there's a salary cap now, which is designed to keep teams down and to make it so that one team can't dominate, and yet the Patriots are still dominating. And I know that Tom Brady faces more scrutiny publicly than any other player before him at that position. And I know that the league rigged it so that they could suspend him for 4 games for nothing. I know that to be a fact. I know that people want to call Brady a system quarterback in spite of the fact that Bill Belichick is, coming into this year anyways, was a below 500 coach in his career without Tom Brady at the helm. And we have about 6 years of data to back that up. So it's not like it's a small sample. We're talking 6 full seasons. Coaches don't get 6 seasons anymore. If you don't win for 6 seasons, you get fired after the 2nd season. You're never going to see 6 seasons. Belichick was a sub-500 coach coming into this year. So with the 3-1 thing, I'm not sure what the exact calculation is, but he was like, his win percentage was like 43, you know, 430 before the season started, something like that. And so at best now he's 500 in 6 seasons without Brady. He was 5-11 the first year in New England with Bledsoe, who went to the Super Bowl with Parcells. So it ain't like Bledsoe was a scrub. And then in the 2nd year, they were 0-2. And then Brady comes in after Bledsoe gets hurt, Super Bowl. Tom Brady was a redshirt freshman, and he led the Patriots to a Super Bowl. And don't tell me it was all about the defense, because those defenders, you know, I'm looking at Willie McGinnis on TV right now. He ain't in the Hall of Fame. I don't see no gold jacket around him. You know, Ty Law missed the cut this year. You know, I don't know if any of those Patriot players, Bruschi, I don't know if any of those guys are going to go to the Hall of Fame. The only one that is Junior Seau. And that was mostly for what he did in San Diego. I don't think Rodney Harrison's in the Hall of Fame. So, where, you know, Richard Seymour ain't in the Hall of Fame. Lloyd Malloy ain't in the Hall of Fame. Where are all these guys that, you know, that were so great on defense? I don't see them. But people would do anything to discredit Tom Brady. So he was seventh on the depth chart when he got to Michigan. He worked his way up to be the starter. And they had a rule saying that if there's a tie, it goes to the upperclassmen. So he had to sit behind Brian Greasy. And then when he became the upperclassman and Drew Henson came up behind him, Lloyd Carr threw that rule out the window and he made Drew Henson the starter. So Brady got shafted. And what did Brady do? He outworked and outperformed Drew Henson, became the starter, won an Orange Bowl. And by the way, he was on the 97 Michigan championship team. Not that he played, but I'm just saying. He did win a championship in college, too. But, you know, and then he gets drafted by the Patriots. He's a sixth-round pick. He was fourth on the depth chart when he got to New England. A lot of times, teams don't activate more than two quarterbacks on a given Sunday. Most teams carry three on the roster. Brady was fourth when he got there. Fourth. And he worked his way up. He outplayed everybody. Then he outworked and outplayed Drew Bledsoe. Became the starter. Super Bowl. Instantaneously. 2 years later, when they went back to the Super Bowl and they played the Carolina Panthers, Brady had morphed into a passer. People want to act like, you know, it was all defense back then. Maybe for the first Super Bowl, you can put the majority of the credit on defense, even though Brady did lead that game-winning drive. But Brady had over 300 yards passing and I think three touchdowns against Carolina, throwing touchdowns to Mike Vrabel, the linebacker. You know, he wins his first 10 playoff games. And everybody says, you know, oh, he's great, but, you know, we like to tear down greatness in our sports culture for some unknown reason. So then they call him a cheater and they say Spygate happens. And, he's a cheater. That's the only reason that he's succeeding, even though every other team in the league was doing the same thing. And it's not like they were, like, recording practices. It was stealing signals during the game, but the league said that you could only steal signals from a certain location in the stadium. And the Patriots ignored the league's warning. And that's all it was. Like, you're still allowed to do that as far as I know, you know. But the recording of the signals thing was not illegal. It was where in the stadium you were allowed to do it from. And the Patriots were doing it from an illegal location. That's what it was. But even if they were stealing signals, it's like, how was that worse than, like, actually, like, watching game film? Like, that's like, you know, if you watch a lot of game film, you're considered smart. But if you steal signals, it's like, oh, well, you're a cheater. Like, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But Spygate was so overblown from the beginning. And then he goes out and he has a perfect season or near perfect season. And, you know, a lucky drive cost him. But and then people were saying that he's nothing without Moss or Gronkowski. And, well, he disproved that. You know, they got rid of Randy Moss and they went back to the Super Bowl in 2011. And then it was like, well, he's nothing without Gronkowski. I had people tell me that he's nothing without Rob Gronkowski, even though he won three Super Bowls without Rob Gronkowski. You know? But they didn't have Gronk today. Brady came back and won again today. Now they want to say he's a system quarterback, in spite of what I already told you about Bill Belichick. Look, man, the bottom line is this. Even if you don't like Tom Brady, you may hate him. Like I said, all that other stuff, all the negativity that they've thrown at him from the time that he got to Michigan 20 years ago, all that stuff has just fallen off. It's just fallen by the wayside. Teflon Tom, man. Like, the stuff doesn't stick to him because he proves the doubters wrong at every turn. And so now all they can do is say, he's friends with Donald Trump. He's friends with Donald Trump, so I don't like him. Really? That's the best y'all can come up with? Like, y'all don't have friends that you don't even really, you know what I'm saying? Like, y'all don't have friends that are assholes. Like, Brady's friends with an ass. You don't have any friends that are asses? Tell the truth. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You have that one friend. Maybe you have several friends that, you know what, that's my boy, but I'm not going to leave him alone with my lady because he might try something. Or, I don't want him watching my kids. I don't know if I want to leave money around him, you know? Y'all all know somebody, or you got that one friend that's a good dude, but you know what? Maybe he sells a little dope on the side. I don't know. But y'all all have friends. Like, none of us have, you know, it's just flawless all up and down with the people that are in our inner circle. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and if you're lying, maybe you have a friend that just lies. Maybe you have a friend that just does that. You know, maybe you have a friend that lies. Maybe you have a friend that cheats on their spouse. Maybe you have a friend that cheats on their taxes. You know, maybe you have a friend that's, you know, nice to you, but in close circles is close quarters is like an anti-Semite, or they're, you know, anti-LGBT or something. Who knows? But that's all they have on Tom Brady now, is they just bring up Donald Trump. That should tell you that the game is over. The game is over. And all that we need to know now is that Tom Brady is the greatest football player of all time. And how did I come to that conclusion? Justin, how'd you come to that conclusion? Well, it's really simple. The one position that we consider to be the most difficult to play in all of American team sports is quarterback. Our most popular sport is football. Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time. It's not disputable anymore. Wasn't disputable before this game. Damn sure isn't disputable now. Quarterback has more responsibility than any other position. Quarterback has more influence and impact than any other position. And now, quarterback is the most scrutinized position by far on a football team. It's not close. And when you factor in all that, when you factor in the fact that quarterback has the most impact on wins and losses directly than any other single player, when you factor in all the responsibility that goes into playing quarterback, and then you consider that Brady's the best at it and has faced the most unfair scrutiny of any athlete of our time, yes, I feel comfortable in saying that Tom Brady's the greatest football player that ever lived. And you want to, if you want to challenge me and say Red Grange was better, you're guessing, but okay. You know, if you want to say Jim Brown was better, you know, I wasn't around to see Jim Brown. And Jim Brown played for the Cleveland Browns, and, you know, I love the Cleveland Browns. So, you know, I got nothing but mad love and respect for Jim Brown, who also wasn't a saint himself. But, you know, I got mad love and respect for Jim Brown as a football player, but Jim Brown didn't have to deal with, he didn't have to deal with what Brady has to deal with. He didn't. I don't think any quarterback has. And I don't think, you know, Brady hasn't had the freedom of being anointed at every turn like Peyton Manning was. And people were trying to force this narrative that Peyton Manning was the greatest when he clearly wasn't. But I think all that stuff served to motivate Tom. And I think all those factors is what made Tom Brady what he is today. This guy just turns that negativity into motivation for himself. And he doesn't do it in a smug or arrogant way like Michael Jordan did. Which is funny because a lot of people that I talk to don't like Brady because they think he's smug and arrogant. So, I mean, you can't win them all. I mean, you know, even though Brady's never, you know, he's never publicly turned on his teammates. He's never thrown his teammates under the bus, never thrown his coaches under the bus, never gotten any trouble off the field. He's never said anything positive. He only speaks highly of his opponents. He never gives out bulletin board material. He's a model citizen on and off the field. He's the perfect quarterback that anybody would want for their football team. He's never done anything negative on the team. You know, he's been accused of negative things, but he's never done anything negative or brought any kind of negative attention to the team himself. Peyton Manning throwing offensive linemen and kickers under the bus. Brady never did anything like that. Brady never did anything like go on a boat trip or Facebook Live in the locker room. He never did anything crazy like that. He's been a model citizen. But people still want to hate on him. You still want to call out the Donald Trump thing. And I feel sorry for you. Because that's all you can do. And here we are, y'all. Somehow I've managed to talk for almost an hour about the Patriots and this Super Bowl and about Tom Brady. And that was not my intention. But, you know, I had a lot to say. After this game, one of the greatest games ever, I had a lot to say. So my apologies. But I guess y'all deserve the full-size podcast after the absence that we have been on. So we'll try to correct that shortly. We're going to look into some more guests that we can bring on the podcast, the preseason podcast of the year, that is. And I look forward to hearing all the post-game talk and the talk in the next few days and weeks about the Patriots and about Tom Brady and how the conversation has moved on. I've moved on from calling him the greatest quarterback ever because he was already that to me. Even before the Seattle Super Bowl, he was already that to me. Now he's the greatest football player ever. Let's see if the rest of the world catches up. Thank y'all for listening. We're out of here. Hip Hop Sports Report signing off. Jay Hicks, the preseason podcast of the year. Be sure to check us out on the website and on Facebook and Twitter. Twitter.com/HHS Report and Facebook.com/HHS Report. Please subscribe to the podcast on Stitcher and iTunes. Shout out to Kenny and Anthony. And I hope I didn't wake my son. I haven't heard it yet, so I think I'm in the clear. Talk to y'all soon. Peace. Stop me. Well, ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight 12 fast enough to stop me.